The 2022 political field was intense, so don't get left behind in 2024. If you're running for political office, the first thing on your to-do list needs to be securing your name on the web. With a yourname.vote web domain from GoDaddy.com. Get yours now.
Welcome to another episode of Breaking Battlegrounds with your host, Sam Stone. Chuck Warren out of studio today. But we're going to get right rolling with our first guest here. Congressman John Curtis represents Utah's 3rd Congressional District, and he's known for getting things done, which is rare enough in Washington these days. Since being elected in 2017, John has passed 15 pieces of legislation into law, ranging in diverse topics from better managing public lands, combating human trafficking, reducing burdensome regulations on small business, and more. And he is ranked the 9th most effective Republican member of Congress by the Nonpartisan Center for Effective Lawmaking. So thank you so much for giving us some of your time this morning. I know you're on a tight deadline with votes coming up there, Congressman. We really appreciate you having the time for us and our listeners.
I love it, Sam. I'm so pleased. I've been looking forward to this and anxious to share with your listeners what's happening here in Washington.
Well, so speaking of what's happening in Washington, one of the issues you like to focus on, which I mentioned, is better managing public lands. That is a huge issue for Utah. It is a huge issue for Arizona, really the entire West. And there's been some rather aggressive rulemaking coming out of the Biden administration. What's going on there right now?
You know, and this is for your listeners' perspectives, too. I share a boundary with Arizona, the Four Corners, but my district goes from the top of Utah to the bottom along the east side all the way down to the Arizona border. And so there are a lot of commonalities. But you're right, there is a march, not just from the Biden administration, but really from all of Washington, D.C., to try to tell local people how to manage their land. And you can imagine how frustrating that is to somebody who for decades and decades, really generations, has done a fabulous job of managing this land, preserving and protecting it, and making sure that grazing continues, that recreation continues, and that we're preserving and protecting this land. And D.C. feels like, for some reason, they know better 2,000 miles away, and it just causes a lot of problems.
It's an important issue that I think, you know, we have listeners, obviously, all across the country. If you are on in California listening in San Diego, if you are back on the East Coast, you don't understand how much of the land in the West is owned by the federal government. How much do you know by percentage or approximately?
Yes. Oh, I do. Yeah. I do. Yeah. So think about this. As a state, we're 67%, but that's nothing. In the rural parts of my district, we are over 90%, some 92, 94%. So think about for a minute trying to run a county when 94% of your land is owned by the federal government and does not produce property tax. They tell you what you can do on it, what you can't do on it. You can't build homes on it, right? I mean, just it is one of the most difficult things that these counties deal with in parts of the West. And you're absolutely right. My colleagues from the East, even my Republican colleagues from the East, can't really comprehend what it's like to have that much land owned by the federal government.
It's really restrictive. And one of the big battles that seems to be breaking is this sort of war on farming and ranching that seems to be coming from the left. And maybe I'm being too dramatic by saying it that way, but but maybe not.
You're not. Yeah. No, I'll just double down on it a little bit. It's a demonization of our ag community. We've seen it with fossil fuels, and now they're coming after the ag community, forgetting where we get our food. Right?
Yeah.
Forgetting, how is this going to work if we just get rid of all of our farmers and ranchers, who, by the way, are the most patriotic, subtly earth people that you'll ever meet.
And absolutely.
Yeah, and this demonization is really unfortunate of these very, very good people.
And what's crazy about that to me, Congressman, is post-COVID, and we saw how close our supply chain came to breaking during COVID.
Absolutely.
How many grocery stores were sitting there with empty shelves. Why would we ever want to consider making ourselves food dependent on foreign nations?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a pattern here. And if you look at energy, you'll see the same pattern. And, you know, remember back in the late 70s when we became dependent because of the oil embargo on a foreign country for fuel, we decided that was a bad place to be and we didn't want to be there. But the parallel is very similar. We want to demonize U.S. natural resources, even though they're the cleanest in the world, and somehow say fly around the country and around the world and say it's okay for Venezuela to produce, it's okay for Iran to produce, it's okay for these other countries, but we're going to shut it down here domestically. You can imagine how hypocritical they feel.
That's something I've really never understood. Obviously, mining also a big issue in the West. For us here in Arizona, copper mining, you need a ton of copper for all of these new technologies, everything from solar panels to electric vehicles to the cell phones everyone's carrying. And we act like mining copper in other countries without any environmental controls is somehow environmentally superior to mining in the United States.
Yeah, it's called outsourcing our guilt. And somehow, if we don't see it, it's okay. So never mind that human rights violations are part of it. Never mind that there's no OSHA regulations. Never mind there's no emissions regulations. And we subject our U.S. businesses to all of that. And it's not okay to do here, but it is okay to do over there. And once again, I'll just say, if you're in one of these industries, you've just got to be going crazy and see the hypocrisy in that.
Well, and it has real national security implications, too, given China's dominant position in these metal markets.
Absolutely. And there's no better example than the mistakes that can be made than Europe, who pretended to be going down a clean road and woke up one day realizing they were buying very dirty fossil fuels from an enemy.
Right.
That's a really bad place to be.
Right. Speaking of which, I want to shift topics here a little bit. There's kind of a lot going on in Congress and in D.C. right now. Another potential speaker fight. Then you've got these various foreign aid bills for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and others. What are you seeing come down the pike right now on all of that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm actually really impressed with a couple of things. I have a number of constituents and even a number of colleagues who are very concerned about the U.S. sending money with no accountability, the U.S. sending money when we're not taking care of our own borders. I mean, you've heard all the arguments. And I'm telling you, Mike Johnson has worked really hard to address those concerns. For instance, the part of the bills that are being put on the floor require a proportionate contribution from Europe as the United States. Part of the bills on the floor, I think people are surprised to find out of the $60 or so billion going to Ukraine funding, about 70% of it never leaves the United States. It stays right here in the United States. And so I think it's a situation where we have to do a better job of really articulating to the American people what are in these bills and what's in the best interest of the United States.
How do we, you know, one of the issues that we've had a lot of guests on here and brought up is that our military supply chain is limited to a relatively small number of companies. We don't seem to have the ability to shift production, increase production as quickly as we need to. How do we start addressing that to make our military procurement more nimble and responsive to our needs at any given moment?
Well, I can tell you a couple of examples. I had somebody in my office yesterday that's one of the only a couple of U.S. manufacturers of drones. And he told me the military was looking at buying 200 a year. And I just laughed. Seriously?
Right. Like,
we got a contract for 200 drones a year, and Iran just launched 400 in one night.
Yeah.
So I do wonder about that. And then another thing, Sam, I think that's relevant is I think what you said applies to our entire supply chain. We learned through COVID just how vulnerable we were. I tell you, between COVID and the Trump tariffs, you know, you got to give Trump a shout out on tariffs. We were all complaining about him, but he saw something we didn't, which is our dependency on China. And that was the first where those we started to break and realize we've got to source other countries. And that started with the Trump tariffs. COVID helped, but we're still a long ways away from it.
Speaking of President Trump, one of the more interesting things that's come up is that there's some folks out there who are accusing you of not being sufficiently supportive of President Trump. Now, I have to tell our listeners, I know for a fact you've been to fundraisers here in Arizona to help support President Trump. You're running all over the place doing that. That seems like a really strange accusation.
You know, I think it comes from this point that I make that, look, I nobody should have my absolute loyalty no matter what they do. And I'll just point to President Trump. As much as I loved about what he did, I felt like he spent too much money. So I pushed back on some of his budgets. But if you're interpreting that as I don't support the president, you know, to your point, my voting record is 91% with Donald Trump. I served with him for 3 years. We overlapped for 3 years, 91%. As you mentioned, during 2020, I went not just to Arizona, to other states to campaign for him. I could see how critical it was that we have a Trump presidency instead of a Biden presidency. And we've seen, right, the results of that. And, hey, listen, when President Trump was doing tax reform, when he was doing deregulation, when he was doing, you know, so many things, Supreme Court, I was wind at his back. And I will continue to do the same thing. And I think we're going to see President Trump in office. And I'm happy to support him.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed. I always, when I do speeches and talks in front of crowds, one of the things I start with is I ask everyone if they have someone in their life, a husband, wife, loved one that they care about more than anybody else in the world, raise your hand. Of course, everyone raises their hand. And then I say, okay, now how many of you agree with that person 100%
exactly.
of the time?
Yes. And
there's always one guy, by the way, who tries to keep his hand up, and it's perfect because then I can call him out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what kind of dream world do you live in? But you're right. And that doesn't mean we don't love them and support them, right? And,
right.
But I do think that our system is dependent on pushback. And gosh, my favorite president was Ronald Reagan. And I could point to a few things, you know, where I would have pushed back had I been serving with him. Doesn't mean I didn't think, you know, he was just an amazing president. And but I think that's my job, too, is to make sure that whatever's done is in harmony with the values of my constituents.
Absolutely. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us today. We have just about 30 seconds left. How do people follow you and your work?
Thank you. It's johncurtis.org. They can go on and subscribe to our different social media feeds. And we'd love them to follow us. It's an exciting race here in Utah. And really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Congressman John Curtis of Utah's 3rd Congressional District. Really appreciate having you on and all your insights today. And thank you. We'll look forward to having you back in the future.
Thanks, Sam. Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Folks, this is Sam Stone for Breaking Battlegrounds. Discover true freedom today with 4 Freedom Mobile. Their SIM automatically switches to the best network, guaranteeing no missed calls. You can enjoy browsing social media and the internet without compromising your privacy. Plus, make secure mobile payments worldwide with no fees or monitoring. Visit 4freedommobile.com today for top-notch coverage, digital security, and total freedom. And if you use the code BATTLEGROUND at checkout, you get your first month of service for just $9 and save $10 a month for every month of service after that. Again, that's code BATTLEGROUND at checkout. Visit 4freedommobile.com to learn more.
At Overstock, we know home is a pretty important place, and that's why we believe everyone deserves a home that makes them happy. Whether you're furnishing a new house or apartment, or simply looking to update and refresh a few rooms, Overstock has everyday free shipping and amazing deals on the beautiful, high-quality furniture and decor you need to transform any home into the home of your dreams. Overstock, making dream homes come true.
Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds with your host, Sam Stone. Chuck Warren out of studio today. And so joining us in the studio to help host this fine program, a good friend of the program, Sean Noble. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Sam.
So you have your own podcast also.
That's true.
People should be subscribed to that as well. And they should be subscribed to Breaking Battlegrounds too.
Absolutely.
Obviously,
I mean, the two together, you don't need to go anywhere else.
No, you get all your news, commentary, everything, and a good couple of jokes every week.
That's right. Breaking Battles, and then you can go to Light Beer Dark Money. Lightbeardarkmoney.com.
Which I've said before is still the greatest name for a podcast. It's just fantastic.
We try to live up to it, but sometimes we fall short.
So unfortunately, we had to rush the first interview with Congressman Curtis because he's actually about to go back to the floor for some votes.
It's a big week.
Yeah, it is a very big week. And you came into the studio. We started a few minutes early. You came in basically right on time, and we got you off from the mic.
I think he did it. I was able to listen to that. He is obviously a very thoughtful congressman, something that is a rarity in the House.
Too much, yeah.
And I think – I say rarity, but it's probably just the opposite. There are more thoughtful congressmen and congresswomen than there are not. It's just that the ones who are not are the ones who get all the attention.
Well, that's
because they're attention seekers.
That's
right?
Pretty much the explanation for our online discourse too,
yes,
right? There's
absolutely
a lot of thoughtful people out there that you can follow and learn from.
But you just see the crazy.
Yeah, you get overwhelmed with screaming.
Yeah, yeah. I tell people all the time that Twitter is not real life. It's an actual dumpster fire. But there are some really good things there that you can find. And so just like that here in Congress, when you're in Congress, you can find some people who have some good, thoughtful discussion. I thought what he said about helping educate the American people and other members of Congress about what is actually the language of these packages in the aid packages going for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. There's a TikTok ban. There's a border security bill. All these things are coming to the floor. I have to give credit to Speaker Johnson. He is putting his career on the line, without question.
I would add that I want to give him credit for something else, that he broke these bills up into individual, here's one for Ukraine, here's one for Israel, here's one for Taiwan. This is what we as Republicans, many of us across the country, have been asking for a long time.
Yeah. Let's have actual discussions about individual topics on their own merits and not a Christmas tree package that has, I can't vote for it or I can't vote against it because it's got other things that we want or don't want. So, yeah, I think you're right. That is it was very thoughtful of him to do that.
He's not getting the credit he should for that.
Absolutely not. And it's because there is this, and I will just flat out say it, there are Putin puppets in the House who are not going to let up, and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and maybe a few others. I have Tom Massie. Those are people who are making arguments about the funding to Ukraine that are literally using the talking points of Russia.
I would agree, but I want to separate out Thomas Massie a little bit.
I knew you would.
Well, because
he's a true libertarian.
Right.
He's actually got some philosophy behind his
rhetoric. He's consistent.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't an issue specifically about Ukraine. He's consistent on foreign aid and foreign military engagements.
Right.
And so, personally, I think there's a role for that voice.
I totally agree. I just disagree that with his decision to join with Marjorie Taylor Greene on this motion to vacate issue.
Well, because, this is wrong. Yeah.
Because look, you can have the argument, but to put somebody's career, on the line for every policy dispute seems a little bit ridiculous. Well, that's not a way to govern.
It goes back to the analogy I gave to the congressman about, do you agree with the person you love the most in the world 100%? No, nobody does, right? There's always that husband in the room with his wife sitting right next to him who wants to want to fake it. But
he's like, I really do. You're like, you're lying.
No. And I always close with the point, if you can't agree with them 100% and you meet a member of Congress, any elected official who's agreeing with you 100%, you're talking to a liar.
Yes. Yes. That is 100% true. I mean, that's such a great point, because there is no one that you can be 100% with on every issue. It's just, because
not if you're honest.
Yeah. Because we're all individuals and we have our own, individual it takes and experiences that form us. So, yeah, you're exactly right. And I think that you can be critical and have a discussion about, is it right to send money to Ukraine or send munitions to Ukraine, that's worth the debate because that's why we do public policy. But the part that's lost on those who are just adamantly no support to Ukraine, period, we are going to support Russia basically by default, is if you'd have said in the 1980s, hey, there's a point in time in which you could spend less than $1 trillion and you can completely decimate Russia's military. You would take that deal every day of the week. And it's not only less than $1 trillion, it's less than $100 billion.
Do you think, and I'm going to pull this kind of out of left field, but do you think, and I think it's too old now to really be a hangover related to this, but we did that effectively in Afghanistan and ended up empowering the wrong people.
Right.
Do you think that colors some of the...
I don't, because I don't think these people are thoughtful enough to remember what happened in Afghanistan in the 1980s. I'm being honest.
I wish I could disagree with you right now, Sean.
Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't have any idea what happened in the 1980s and that the Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
She needs to start by watching Charlie Wilson's War.
Yes, exactly. I mean, just to use a little bit of pop culture to educate yourself about the 80s. I mean, Red Dawn, for crying out loud. But there is a difference because Afghanistan, you know, the Russians was stupid to try to go, but they were just in this expansionary force. But if we don't stop Russia, it's not like there's going to be a worse thing that rises if we beat Putin, right? There isn't anything worse than Putin. He is trying to advance Russia. He's trying to rebuild the Soviet Union, you know, the great empire.
I mean, has been something he's talked about for exactly 30 years, I mean, since he first came into power.
I mean, he is a former KGB officer. I mean, it's you don't take the Soviet out of this.
Did you ever hear there was – I'm not a huge fan of Dick Cheney, but he had a great quote about Putin right after Bush met him for the first time, George W. Bush. Bush said, oh, I looked in his eyes and I saw a human being and blah, blah, blah. And someone asked Cheney about that and he said, yeah, I looked in his eyes and I saw three letters, KGB.
It's exactly right. And, you know, unfortunately, Putin has been able to pull the wool over on the eyes of many people, Tucker Carlson being one of them. I mean, I think that what Tucker did when he went over to Russia and interviewed Putin and then went on this just
well,
crazy.
The interview was one thing. It's what he did after that I thought was a very different thing.
Right.
We have just about a minute before we go to break. And, folks, we got to tell you about our friends at YRefi. You've got to check them out. Go to their website, invest the letter Y, then refy.com. Learn how you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return in a secure collateralized portfolio. It is a fantastic opportunity to help your family and help secure your financial future. And by investing with YRefi, you're actually helping others. You're doing good for yourself by doing good for the world. And that's a fantastic opportunity. You can help college students who are struggling with high interest rate debt get out from under that debt and get their lives back on track. Again, check them out. Invest the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI24 and tell them Chuck and Sam sent you. Breaking Battlegrounds. We'll be back with more in just a moment. All right, welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds with your host, Sam Stone. Joining me in the studio today, Sean Noble. And folks, are you concerned about big tech tracking your every move? Experience true freedom with 4 Freedom Mobile. Visit the number 4, freedommobile.com today for top-notch coverage, digital security, and total freedom. Use the code BATTLEGROUND at checkout to get your first month of service for just $9 and save $10 a month every month after that. Again, that's code BATTLEGROUND at checkout. Go there, 4freedommobile.com today. Okay, joining us up next, Con Carroll, commentary editor for the Washington Examiner, served as communications director in the U.S. Senate for 7 years before returning to journalism. He's a graduate of the Antonin Scalia Law School, and lives in Northern Virginia with his wife and 3 children. You can follow him online at concarroll.com. Con Carroll, thank you so much. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. I always just go with Scalia Law School. Just get that first name. It's always a tricky one.
That's a great point.
I am good at getting tongue-tied on this program, so I have no idea why they let me stay on the air here, but that's a good advice, and I'll take it. So
it's not like there's a ton of other Scalias out there, so just say the name and move on.
So the big news, you know, not big news, but it's, I think, shocking to some people and maybe not so much to others, is what's been going on with NPR, their CEO, and her unbelievable Twitter history. Is this more common than we think? Because you've seen a lot of folks out there saying this kind of thinking, which is really, to me, very vapid, has infested institutions from coast to coast.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think when you look at her resume, not just her tweets, but her resume, you really see that she is a perfect embodiment of this kind of globalist NGO mindset, right? And I wrote an article this week where I dubbed her the Queen of the Karens.
Which is a great piece, right away. We have that up and we will repost it on our social medias.
Right. And what triggered the thought in my head is one of her tweets, she said, quote, "I know that hysteric white woman voice. I was taught to do it and I've done it." I'm like, yeah, I bet she has. I bet that is, in fact, her entire professional persona is her Karen voice, which she uses to enforce ideologically on, the progressive worldview on everyone around her. And she's not some anomaly. She is the, like I said, just the embodiment of this globalist NGO. I mean, to look at her resume, just to step back, you know, this is a woman who grew up in a very white Connecticut suburb of New York City, then went to study first in Syria, then in Cairo, then back to New York City before internships in London and Germany, before she finally came to work at the World Bank in Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, that she's just a perfect byproduct of that set of people.
Yeah.
What's astounding to me particularly is, you know, I grew up listening to NPR. Obviously, I didn't agree with it all the time, but there was enormous value there as a fair arbiter of the news, or at least as close to fair as you get most of the time. But she has no background, right, in journalism or experience in the industry. She came, like you said, from the NGO world and then from Wikimedia. How do you put someone like that in charge of what is supposed to be the nation's flagship journalistic institution?
Well, I think her role at Wikimedia and what she tried to do there and what she officially said she was trying to do there makes her new role at NPR all that more scary. Because when you look at, you know, not just her tweets, but now they're digging up videos of what she wants to do or what she was trying to do. And basically, you know, Wikipedia always from its founding, like most of the internet, was produced by generally white men, right? And so she would look at all the Wikipedia is volunteer based. There are people that get paid, but most of the pages you see are created by volunteers. And of course, you look at that, and it's because white men are just more interested in this kind of stuff. But she saw that as a problem that needed to be solved, and that these voices need to be, you know, controlled and managed, and that truth didn't matter, and instead you had to have a specific progressive worldview that had to be heard on Wikipedia's pages, and she was going to enforce that through policy to make sure that the truth was not the priority, and that instead what she called, you know, consensus and getting things done was. And it's that mindset that's why she was hired for NPR, to bring that mindset and to bring those the censorship instincts to NPR. And I think that's just very scary for an already troubled organization.
Yeah, that is hugely problematic, and it is emblematic also of why so many of our flagship newspapers, NPR and others, are seeing declining readership, listenership. I think it's astounding that they don't seem to comprehend that when you go out on a daily basis and try to offend half the potential audience, that audience doesn't then stay tuned in. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's worse than that because, you know, there's a kind of feedback loop in the sense that they're no longer looking for a general audience. They're looking for more of a subscription model. So you have the people that are actually paying X amount of dollars to the New York Times or, you know, calling in to NPR and giving them money.
Con, I got to cut you off real quick. We're going to be coming back with more here in just a moment.
At Overstock, we know home is a pretty important place, and that's why we believe everyone deserves a home that makes them happy. Whether you're furnishing a new house or apartment, or simply looking to update and refresh a few rooms, Overstock has everyday free shipping and amazing deals on the beautiful, high-quality furniture and decor you need to transform any home into the home of your dreams. Overstock, making dream homes come true.
Folks, this is Sam Stone for Breaking Battlegrounds. Discover true freedom today with 4 Freedom Mobile. Their SIM automatically switches to the best network, guaranteeing no missed calls. You can enjoy browsing social media and the internet without compromising your privacy. Plus, make secure mobile payments worldwide with no fees or monitoring. Visit 4freedommobile.com today for top-notch coverage, digital security, and total freedom. And if you use the code BATTLEGROUND at checkout, you get your first month of service for just $9 and save $10 a month for every month of service after that. Again, that's code BATTLEGROUND at checkout. Visit 4freedommobile.com to learn more. Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds with your host Sam Stone. In studio with me today, Sean Noble. And folks, you've heard us say it before. I'll keep saying it again until you do it. You got to go to invest, the letter Y, then REFY.com, and learn how you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return on a secure collateralized portfolio. It's a fantastic opportunity to secure the future for you and your family. And by investing with Y Refi, you're doing well for yourself by doing good for others. You can help college students get out from under their high interest debt. It's a fantastic opportunity. Again, check it out, invest, the letter Y, then REFY.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI24.
Sam, you're really good at that. Con, thanks for being with us. Just a reminder, we have Con Carroll as our guest. This is Sean Noble. Con, you were just making the point about how these news organizations have been moving to a subscription model, but kind of going back to NPR. NPR obviously is not, because it's funded by the government, funded by donations. And, you know, you had this all kind of started as a result of Uri Berliner, who has been a 25-year, reporter there, producer. And he made the point in a piece on Free Press that, one of the points was that out of the 87 members of the editorial team in D.C. for NPR, all of them, not one Republican, all of them were Democrats. It was 87-0. And he was like, maybe we're not as diverse as we should be in that regard, given all the DEI stuff that we follow in the other ways. And then to have this person in with the Queen all Karens, as you mentioned, Catherine Mayer, as the head of it, that just puts more fuel on the fire. From my what I think, what is Congress going to do? I presume the House, one of the House committees, is going to have some kind of a hearing and call her up there, right?
I'm sure they'll have hearing. Whether or not anything will happen out of that hearing, I'm highly doubtful of.
Right.
That doesn't mean they shouldn't have the hearing. That doesn't mean they shouldn't get her up there and have her answer questions about what her feelings are on truth and what she's trying to accomplish at NPR and what she was trying to accomplish at Wikimedia before that. I think getting that all on the record under oath is of value. But I hope your listeners are not sitting there hoping that this Republican Congress is then going to finally defund NPR, because I don't know if you've been paying attention, but it doesn't seem like they have the power or will to get that done.
Yeah, well, and that, frankly, I mean, I think that one of the things, even if they voted to defund it, it would go nowhere. I mean, I think part of the challenge that some Republicans in the House don't recognize when they talk to their constituencies, when they talk to the American people, they act as if, it's only because Speaker Johnson we can't get this done. Well, without any recognition that we have Chuck Schumer in the Senate
and
Democrats
and
Joe Biden in the White House. I mean, there is a little bit of limitation on what we can actually get done.
Yes, there's an upper limit as to what they can accomplish.
And so in that vein, this is a big week for Congress. How do you see this stuff playing out with these votes on the foreign aid package? There's four or five different bills that Johnson's put together. How does this look, and what comes at the end of this?
I think at the end of it, Ukraine gets its money. I think these bills pass, and then the Senate, stitches them together as they see fit, and it finally gets done. Then, you know, it looks like there's going to be a motion to vacate. I think the big difference between this time as last time is that Democrats are kind of bored with the theater of it all. I think last time they were more than happy to embarrass Kevin McCarthy and take the short-term political gain of voting with Matt Gaetz and those other Republicans to vacate the chair. Now, remember, they didn't have to vote for Kevin McCarthy in order to stop that motion. All they had to do was not vote at all. All they had to do was just vote present, right? Instead, Democrats chose to vote with Gaetz, right? To vote with the crazies in order to get rid of McCarthy. And what that did is it derailed Ukraine aid. The whole reason Gaetz filed that motion to vacate is because McCarthy's next step was Ukraine aid.
Right.
And so I think what the Democrats have realized is that, look, Ukraine could have had their aid, you know, months ago if they just would have, you know, not even voted with McCarthy, but just not voted at all.
Just taken a walk.
Instead, they voted for chaos. They voted for Gaetz, and Ukraine, therefore, has suffered in the meantime because of what Democrats did.
Yeah, that is a great point that I don't think is discussed enough.
I actually hadn't heard anybody make the point that clearly.
Yeah, that Ukraine's suffering because of the actions of the Democrats following Gaetz, you know, off this cliff.
For giggles. Yeah. They did it for giggles.
Yeah, and, well, you know, they obviously hate McCarthy. And so I agree with you. I think that they are. And bored might be a good way to put it. It also might be that they're just tired of the shenanigans.
Well, Con, I would ask, we brought this up with the previous guest also, but shouldn't Speaker Johnson be getting some credit for breaking these bills up into their individual buckets instead of running yet another omnibus? Isn't this what Republicans have been saying we want to start seeing happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was in a tough spot. I think it's fine, you know, breaking them up. But, you know, he then put them into one rule, which, you know, kind of makes their passage kind of like I wouldn't call an omnibus, but, you know, it does kind of, you know, put them into the same bill. They're going to be sent over the Senate and chopped up anyways. So, you know, however he could get it across the line, I think that's fine. You know, whether he puts it as a loan or direct payment or whatever else he wants to do it to assuage some conservatives, I think that's fine. There was just a universe of people in the caucus that were never going to be happy if Ukraine aid passed, no matter what. And they're still unhappy, and they're going to be happy. I think he finally realized that and just said, I'm going to take this bullet and move on. And I think that's where we are. I think he should have done it sooner, but that's where we are.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it because there is no appeasing. I mean, they clearly are never they've completely become Putin's puppets. So they're never going to go off of that.
Shifting topics a little bit here. We just had the Mayorkas impeachment, which moved from the House to the Senate, and the Senate tabled it. Has that ever happened before with an impeachment bill or impeachment?
No. It's new ground. I think it's how all impeachments will be handled going forward. Think of any of the past impeachments we've had. It's all just been a very shirts and skins game. You know, people very rarely cross parties on these matters. And so I think now when you have the majority who does not want the impeachment, they're just not even going to bother with the formality. They'll just quickly dismiss it. Now, you know, if you have a opposition party in charge that actually does want the theater of it, then yes, they'll go through the motions of the trial. But I think anytime you have a party that controls the Senate that also is a party that controls the White House, this is the new way that impeachment will be dealt with. It'll just be dismissed outright.
It is astounding to me that the Democrats have not learned that when they change precedent, it comes back and bites them in the ass every single time. When Harry Reid decided that he was going to nuke the filibuster for justices, then all of a sudden it came back and bit him. You know, that's how we have the Supreme Court that we have, because he took the filibuster away for the courts. And now they're tabling an impeachment. Well, when if they ever try to, like, if the Democrats take the House and the Republicans have the Senate and Trump wins and they impeach Trump, then it's going to get tabled. I mean, it just strikes me as bizarre that the Democrats haven't figured out that they're doing things that are only going to hurt them in the long run.
I just think they think they're very special children, and that the rules therefore don't apply to them. You know, I mean, they think that democracy really is at stake, that it'll be literally the end of the world if Trump wins, and therefore any tactics to make sure that doesn't happen are therefore valid. And I think that's the same mindset they took to the judicial nominations beforehand, and that they take to pretty much any issue. And yeah, I think it explains a lot of their behavior.
What, speaking of the end of democracy, how do you see the 2024 election playing out with these trials that Trump's dealing with? And, we see a lot of things happening with RFK Jr. being on the ballot in some places. This is, in my mind, the most unpredictable, I guess, of all elections.
Because therefore, you're asking me to predict it?
Yes, yes,
exactly,
I am.
Right.
Well, and then throw in the thing that I've been saying on my podcast, Light Beer Dark Money, for the last almost a year. I don't think that Biden's going to end up being the general election candidate. I still believe that the Democrats are going to replace him at the convention. People think I'm crazy. I might be crazy. I still think that it'll be Michelle Obama, because you can't leapfrog Kamala with anyone else. But that is a little bit of a out there theory.
I've wavered over it, but I'm not in that camp. Yeah, no.
I know. Con, what should people expect besides the unexpected?
Sure. Well, first, let me say 2016, I think, was very humbling for me and a lot of other people. So I'm very leery to give predictions after I so confidently predicted there was no way Trump was going to win, which of course did not happen. He did win. That said, I think earlier when, Biden had those very clear and public memory lapses and Trump was further ahead in the polls, I think I was on your side as far as them replacing him at the convention, which is the only place you could do it. But he has since rebounded in the polls. I think he had a performance at the State of the Union that Democrats at least view as strong and competent. So I would bet that he's safe for now, unless you see him, publicly fall down a flight of stairs. I think he's fine. And then heading into November, anything can happen. It's a puncher's race for both candidates.
Yeah.
I keep wondering, guys, if this isn't one of those races where we're going to see a lot more ticket splitting than normal.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I still think the RFK Jr. factor matters. They announced today, I think, or yesterday, that he's now qualified for Michigan. I mean, that's a huge deal. I mean, it is a huge deal.
Ralph Nader, just getting, two or three was enough to, pull Florida and pull some huge states in 2000. So,
Jill Stein pulled more than
the margin of victory
in Arizona.
Arizona, Georgia, a couple of different states. Yeah.
Yeah. And here in Arizona, Con, this is something you may not know, but because I'm a geek on this stuff. But the wild card here in Arizona, and this is probably true in other states. I haven't looked at them, but because we're in Arizona, I look at it. Typically, in a presidential election, I went back about 30 years. You'll have about 10,000 ballots that are left blank on the presidential line. So people vote the ballot, uh-huh, and they'll leave the presidential line blank. In 2016,
which these days I totally understand.
Yeah. Which, when 2016, it was 90,000 people, and then in 2020, it was 60,000 people. So there's so many people who are like, and if you look at the deep dive on where these come from, it's mostly Republican areas. So it's obviously people who vote for Trump. But I think that's a part of this factor with the RFK Jr. is going to have impact in a certain number of states. Yeah.
And Nicole Shanahan as his VP could certainly also have some impact. So that's going to be very interesting. Con Carroll, commentary editor for the Washington Examiner. Con, how do folks follow you and your work?
Oh, yeah. Of course, WashingtonExaminer.com. Very easy to go ahead and see our work there. And, of course, I'm on Twitter way too much. Handle is just @ConCarroll, CONNCARROLL.
fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate having you on the program.
Folks, it was a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Folks, if you're not, get on our podcast. Get that extra segment that's coming up. You don't want to miss it. We have Kylie's crime update. Lots of blood and gore for you. And then we're going to finish with a sunshine moment. So we're going straight from murder and mayhem to light. Stay tuned. Make sure you download BreakingBattlegrounds.vote. We'll be back on the air next week.
The 2022 political field was intense, so don't get left behind in 2024. If you're running for political office, the first thing on your to-do list needs to be securing your name on the web. With a yourname.vote web domain from GoDaddy.com. Get yours now.
All right, welcome to the podcast segment of Breaking Battlegrounds. Big thank you to both of our guests today, Congressman John Curtis of Utah's 3rd Congressional District. Sean, I thought he was fantastic.
Great.
And Con Carroll of the Washington Examiner, one of the more thoughtful pundits in D.C.
Yes, definitely.
Pleasure to have him on. So thank you to both of our guests. But now what everyone really is tuning into this program for and waiting for, blood, guts, and gore.
That's right.
Yeah.
It bleeds, it leads.
It does today. Kylie's corner has morphed into murder and mayhem. So Kylie, what updates do we have? It's been another exciting week in the world of violent crime.
I know. Unfortunately, it has been. I have two updates today and then a news story that I'm going to share with you. But the first update I have is about the Brian Koberger case. And he is the one that's being accused of killing the four students in Idaho back in November of 2022.
And that was one of the first ones you started talking about on this program.
I think
right?
That's when I started wanting to do the changing from the sunshine moment over to my not so sunshiny moment.
We've had to totally replace Kylie as our sunshine moment. But there will be one at the end of the show. So stay tuned.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's taken him over a year to submit an alibi, but on April 17th, it was the last day he was able to submit an alibi for it to be used in court.
Well, we've all had writer's block before.
Right.
And this is what the defense has come up with. Mr. Koberger was out driving in the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022, as he often did to hike and run and or to see the moon and stars. He drove through the area of South Pullman, Washington, west of Moscow, Idaho, including Wawa Hawaii Park. So that's what they came up with.
That's not the Wawa that Joe Biden staged his appearance at, by the way, folks.
No. But his defense then said that they were going to bring in an expert to discuss his phone data. But if we go back to the original arrest that was made, they had said his phone data showed him driving towards the incident, and then his phone data went out, and then it came back on after the incident occurred. So they're going to try to prove he wasn't in the area, which I imagine this person's going to remember. Brian Koberger was studying criminal defense. So I think he's a lot smarter than we think he is. And I feel like he was probably, you know, putting in air quotes, stargazing and doing whatever prior to prove that, oh, I did this often and my phone data would lose, you know, I'd lose connection. So that's why it's not connecting.
Yeah.
But really all the defense is saying, all he has to do is show reasonable doubt and he could get out. So
I mean, the question is, how well did he premeditate this murder? Essentially,
sounds like pretty well.
Yeah,
if he was actually, you know, covering his tracks in the sense of doing things to create a pattern.
Well, but then we saw some things in the case that Kylie's pointed out that were not all that smart, right? So, six of one, half a dozen of another.
Yeah. So. It's only a time. I just don't understand why you can submit an alibi a year and a half later.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then it'd be used.
That is really kind of astounding.
Yeah. But anyways, people that weren't so sneaky with getting away with something was a few weeks ago, I had talked when I was driving out to Boston. I'm often on an app called the Citizens app. You want to sponsor us? Let me know. But you can go on there. You can see all the crime that's going on in the area. And we had stopped in this, I forget what the town was called, but it was in Texas. And we were driving through the panhandle of Oklahoma when I came across this case of two women that were missing at the time. They have now, their bodies have now been discovered, but it was Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. They were driving through the panhandle of Oklahoma to pick up Veronica's 6-year-old daughter and 8-year-old son to celebrate her daughter's birthday. She got visiting rights every Saturday. So this was a Saturday going into a Sunday. And Jillian was the supervisor. So she had to supervise all the visits with Veronica.
So they she was like a state CPS or something?
Yes, correct. She was also a pastor's wife, but they never made it to the birthday party. Their car was later found abandoned in a rural area of Texas County, Oklahoma, about 11 miles south of Elkhart, Kansas, which is where the party was taking place. They never made it to pick up the children either. Well, four people are now in custody, and I encourage you to go look them up because they are scary as hell. But court documents say that the suspect was the children's grandmother and her boyfriend, and then two of their friends. They were all members of a group called God's Misfits.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so one of the couples that was arrested had a 16-year-old daughter. She told investigators that God's Misfits was comprised of seven people in Oklahoma, and it was an anti-government group that has religious affiliations. There's another group apparently somewhere else in this country that's also called God's Misfits, and they are not associated with these people, and they want to make that clear. But
it's a misfit fight.
Yeah. Yes, it is. But 2 days prior to the woman's disappearance, the daughter of one of the couples that was arrested claims that her parents said that they were going on a mission the following days. But Veronica and Jillian's bodies were then discovered on a land leased by one of the suspects. And now they're further investigating what happened. But I imagine it's over this custody battle because Veronica was moving from not having supervised visits to then just being able to visit with the kids without a supervisor. And I think that's what has set the grandmother off. The dad did not have custody because he was in a rehabilitation center somewhere. So he was not involved in the disappearance. But prior, the grandmother had made death threats to Veronica and to her lawyers. So I don't know how she still had custody of these children even but
when someone says grandmother, I do not think of murder and mayhem.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that's just crazy, right? It's just like,
if you go look them up, you know, it might make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I just did. It does make more sense, but it is crazy.
Another crazy thing about this case is when I was looking this up, there's a News Nation reporter who, prior to the arrest, they went to the scene to see where like the car was abandoned just to show viewers how rural the area was. And when they were approaching the scene, they got out of the car, they started taking video. A black SUV came and tried to block their car in. They said, you know, our plan was, if we saw a car, we were just going to hop right back in our car and get out of there. This black SUV then followed them for a few miles until they kind of got to a more public area. But they had hired a private investigator to look into this. And she'd said that this area is very well known for human trafficking. So if this was not involved with the case, this is not an abnormal thing that happens. So if you're driving through the panhandle of Oklahoma, be careful.
Or just avoid it altogether.
Avoid it. I mean, I had to drive through it. I was like, and the maps is not very good. They kept trying to take shortcuts and putting us on people's farms. And at first, like, I wasn't realizing what was happening until I'm like on this bumpy road and I'm like, okay, what's going on? So then I was able to, you know, ignore what the map was telling me to do. But if you're there, just stay on the ground. You know, don't get on the dirt roads.
Having done some work in Oklahoma, I got to say, unless you have like a relative in the panhandle.
Yeah, there's no reason to be there.
No,
yeah.
None. It is good place to get pulled over. I can tell you that from experience. Right. The cops like handing out tickets.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
I bet. They probably bored out there. But my last story also took place in a rural area. So just, you know, I'm just going to say probably avoid the rural areas if you don't have to go in there. But this story is kind of crazy. It's still ongoing, so I don't have all the answers. But
in case you're wondering, folks, Kylie Kipper is not a small town gal. Yeah.
I am not. No. There's enough crime in the big cities for me that, like, I don't need to be going to the small town, to the rural areas. But anyways, so this incident took place on April 11th in Seminole County, Florida. This all started with a video of a carjacking. Within 2 hours of the carjacking, police got a call about a car that was on fire in a remote area, to which they found it so engulfed in flames that they weren't able to tell the make or the model of the car. They later discovered that it was the car that was in this video. And in the car was Catherine Awavias. And they found a dozen shell casings around the car. She was obviously deceased. The person who took the video of the carjacking did call 911. He said he witnessed a green Acura chasing and ramming into this car, to which he then started recording. Catherine, who was in the car, she had a phone. She called her husband and she said, "I'm being followed by somebody." He then said, "Don't get out of the car. Just come straight home." Catherine nor her husband called the police during this incident. The husband also never called the police after she never appeared home. He wasn't like, "My wife was being chased and followed. What happened?
What?
He just never cared.
What?
That's crazy.
Yes. So he,
I smell something.
Yeah. So later, the police figure out this green Acura that was involved in the carjacking is extremely rare. There's only three in the state of Florida. And two of them have been sold to salvage yards. So really, this is the one of one car. It was bought from an auction. It was bought from an auction where someone along the way, I'm not surprised, did not file the title paperwork. So they don't know who owns it. But they do know that 2 days prior to this incident, the car was at an apartment complex illegally parked and it was towed away. The tow truck driver who towed the car away was then murdered. He was shot at his home and they found over 100 spent rounds at the crime scene. And the green Acura was also seen at the crime scene prior to the murder.
What?
So they really wanted this car back.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, what's in that car?
Yeah, no kidding.
There's money in the banana stand.
So I had a friend, this is probably 15 years ago, 12, 15 years ago. I had a friend who bought a Ford Explorer at auction, right? And it had some damage and whatnot, government seizure of some type. Well, he owned a body shop and he would go buy these things, fix them up and sell them, whatever. And he starts pulling it apart and the thing is packed. from tip to tail, the thing is packed with cocaine, right? I mean, there's bags in the tire, in the spare tire. They're in the doors. They're in the, underneath the floor, all this stuff. And so, of course, that ended up being a lot of fun for him because then he's dealing with DEA and all this stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
But – what is in this car? This Acura.
I don't know, but there has been one arrest made. It's not one of the carjackers. And I mean, if it is, we don't know yet, but it was actually a deputy with Orange County, Florida. His name is Francisco. And he was apparently, this is the husband by the police have said he's been cooperative, but they think he knows more. And I'm going to tell you why. So the husband and her brother of the woman who's found deceased knew Francisco's wife, the deputy's wife. And they asked, "Can your husband give us information on the investigators working this case?" Not information about the case, but the investigators working the case. Francisco then pretended to be a detective, went into the system, and then shared the deputy's names, cell phone numbers, and home addresses with the husband and father.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, where in Florida is this again? We need...
Orange County, Florida, and Seminole. Seminole.
So that's northern Florida, right? Am I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do say it's kind of in the central northern area, I believe.
Okay.
But those are the only arrests that have been made. And this deputy made bail. It was only a $15,000 bail, and he is now currently out on bail.
Wow.
That's
So this is all I know. This is all developing. The arrest, or he was out on bail yesterday, so this is the most recent update so far. But I'll keep you posted what happens. But something about this green Acura.
Yeah, this car is the devil's sleigh right there.
Yeah, right. Something's in this car.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, with it being so unique, I'm not sure how they haven't found it since the incident, but.
Yeah, that's a, well.
Or even the tow truck murder, I don't know.
Yeah, boy,
the poor tow truck driver.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
they're going to find it in a swamp or a lake.
Yeah, no, totally. Or crushed in somebody's salvage yard. Yeah. Wow. Well, Kylie, thank you so much. How is the East Coast treating you?
It's getting better, you know.
Yeah?
It's getting there.
she's great. Look, folks, I don't want to give away the secret. Let me be very clear. Arizona is a terrible, awful place to live, and nobody should ever move here again.
Don't ever come here.
Right. No. You don't want to do that. You don't want to enjoy the beautiful, sunshiny weather and 84-degree day that we have. Don't do it.
No, we were at the dog park and the high was, I think, like 58 this day. And I was wearing sweatshirt, sweatpants. And this woman goes, I know you're not from here. I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, well, it's cold. So.
Well, yeah, because 58, if you're actually from Boston, is T-shirt
yeah,
and shorts
that's
weather.
Absolutely
it's
shorts
nice,
weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I want to say absolutely, but.
Well, it is if you're from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, yeah. Once it goes over 50,
yep.
That first over 50 day is when you put on your shorts.
That's right.
You take
which
them,
was this week.
Yeah. That's, see?
Yeah.
Summer has arrived, Kylie. Rejoice. All right. Kylie Campbell, the former Kylie Kipper, thank you so much. We really, everyone loves those updates. The murder
yes.
and mayhem.
Yep.
You can't get any better than that. We had a good program today.
Yeah.
It was fun discussions with everybody, and we like to try to end on a high note, so we're going to do that here in just a moment. Now, I was actually out of the studio 1 week. Have you done one of these before?
No, this is my first time.
This is your first. So we've got to start by introducing you to the guests.
Yeah, my name's Jenna Moore, and I'm a graduate from ASU. I'm graduating right now, and so I'm just hopping on to share some sunshiny moments whenever I can.
Well, and I should put in a little plug for her boyfriend if I can,
oh,
if I'm
please.
Not going to embarrass you too much. So tell us what he's doing, because that's actually a really cool story, I think, that's flying under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, so my boyfriend is running in one of the most competitive swing districts here in Arizona for LD2, and he's running for the State House.
And his name, Ari?
His name is Ari Bradshaw.
Bradshaw, okay.
You can find him at ari.vote.
That's a great website.
It is.
We always love the .vote domains, folks. Yeah, gotta get your .vote domain. Yeah. And he had an announcement. I was really stunned. Ari Bradshaw, how old is he, by the way?
He is 26 years old.
26 years old.
He's now one of the youngest people who are involved in the House race.
And he was right near the top of all fundraisers so far.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
What, like fourth or something?
Yeah. He raised $90,000, I believe, this past quarter. And it's so fascinating to hear him talk about it and watch him work. He has a great strategy, and I'm really excited about him. Everybody's really excited about him, and I think he's got a good shot in LD2, hopefully.
I think he does too, actually. And I think he can be – he's, you know, his background's in tech, right?
Yes, tech and marketing, and he's a smart guy.
I got to tell you, Sean, having worked in the government, there's almost no one in government IT who has an actual background in
tech.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right.
It's
well, and how refreshing will it be to have somebody at the state legislature who understands tech?
Right.
When they talk about these bills that impact tech and privacy and all those things,
knows. All the various government systems that you interact yeah. with on a regular yeah. basis. Someone like this, it's one of the reasons I always try to look for candidates. And even if they're long shots, I'll work with candidates who bring a specific skill set to the table that's lacking in broader government.
Yep.
Because even if they didn't make it, boy, we need those people to be able to talk, and you need to be able to hear what they have to say and how we fix some of this. Because I think everyone agrees. It's one of the things I think is driving all the bad blood in the country right now is that our government is not functioning.
Right, right.
Like if you're on the left and you want more taxes and more government programs, but you're not, you're getting the taxes, but the government programs are failing. They're just eating up all the money. They're not delivering what you're asking for. So then their reaction is, well, just give us more money.
Right.
On the Republican side, you're like, wait, you keep taking more and more of my money and you do nothing productive with it. So when you have someone like Ari who's running for a seat who can bring real insight into those systems – man, I'm a big believer that we've got to do everything we can to get those folks in. I don't want to bash too much on the lawyers out there, but we got plenty of them.
Oh, there's so many. There are too many lawyers in politics.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
I love those people like Ari Bradshaw who can do and bring things to the table that the rest of their colleagues cannot.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah. Jenna, so now that I've waxed eloquent on your boyfriend, who I do really know, I know and like, and I think he could be a great addition to the State House, you're going to be bringing us now every week. We're going back to the sunshine moment to finish this podcast from the gloom and doom and murder and mayhem that Kylie brings to the table, because we have felt a little weird about that. We like this program to be positive and uplifting, so take it away.
Yeah, of course. Well, so I just have a little story about a man who just is graduating college, just like I am. But he decided to go back more than 50 years after graduating high school to college. He's a 72-year-old father of five, and his 99-year-old mother was actually there to cheer him on as he crossed the stage for his graduation ceremony.
Oh, that is cool.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. So his name is Sam Kaplan. He graduated high school in 1969, and he decided to re-enroll when he was 68 years old. And he said, I was riding down the 316 and heard on the radio that Georgia Gwinnett College was offering a degree that involved script writing. And he said, my car seemed to have developed automatic steering. And I pulled over onto Collins Hill Road. And 5 minutes later, I was registering for the fall semester.
Wow. So, and here he is 4 years later.
Here he is 4 years later. And he had a standing ovation. Everyone was very excited when he graduated. And there's a video and everyone's cheering for him. And he said when he had to jump back into academics, he was nervous about meeting all of his new friends because they're all 50 years his junior. So he said he made it a goal to meet a quota. And each day he would approach a new student with the intention of learning more about their academic goals and their dreams for the future. And he said he thinks that those are uncommon questions to ask of these kids, and they don't get that with people. And he said, I think I have a good relationship with them. I got hugs from a lot of them on the last day of classes. So it's just great that they were all so excited and gave him a big applause at his graduation in the video. And it reminds me of a story that went viral a few years ago. A pair of 81-year-old grandmothers, they were also best friends, decided to go on an adventure. And among other things, they rode a sleigh pulled by huskies in Finland, flew high in a hot air balloon in Egypt, which I would love to do. That would be an awesome vacation. And they also crossed the Drake Passage, which is one of the most dangerous journeys for a ship to take. It's around the southern tip of South America from Cape Horn. Mm-hmm. They took a 2-day journey across the ocean, and they said that they experienced 20 feet waves on this passage.
Oh, I mean, that's... That is a famous graveyard of sailing ships.
Right. Yeah.
Where, I mean, it is colder than you can possibly imagine. The wind is incredible and the waves. I have some friends who are sailors and they say the difference there is that most places the waves come from one direction, which you can deal with when you're navigating a ship. But here you get rogue waves from every direction chopping it up. It is incredibly dangerous. That is a very cool trip.
Yeah,
I love his intentionality in his approach to all the other students.
What
is his name?
His name is Sam Kaplan, and
Sam
he's
Kaplan.
72. Yeah.
That is awesome. What a great story.
That's incredible. I love that. Any final thoughts, folks?
I mean, can't get better than Sam Kaplan.
No.
Follow his lead, you know.
It's great. You can have an adventure at any age and start anything new, no matter where you're at.
And make a new friend, no matter how different from you they might be.
The more the merrier.
I love that. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in once again. As always, we really appreciate having you. If you aren't already subscribed, well, you're probably hearing this because you are subscribed. But that doesn't mean you couldn't share our link with a friend. I mean, just, you know, just a little suggestion. Send them an email. Get them to subscribe to Breaking Battlegrounds so they don't miss any of this incredible content. And once again, to everyone today, thank you so much to our guests, Congressman Curtis, Con Carroll of the Washington Examiner, Sean Noble, who took some time to join us. You can light beer, dark money.
Happy to be here.
Check that out.
Check it out.
Yep. And thank you so much, Kylie, Jenna. Really appreciate it. Great stuff. We will be back next week.
See you.